And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're sitting there at number two, and there's been all this talk of generational talent, the real type of generational talent. When you're picking a number two, you want somebody that you think has a limitless ceiling that can do it all, especially if it's not quarterback. Because if it's not quarterback, this guy at number two better be at the height of his position. And so both of us, I think we kind of agreed on Travis Hunter, the Heisman Trophy winner. You heard Andrew Berry compare him, we'll have him at a wide receiver. He called him a unicorn. Chris in Akron disagrees vehemently with me. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, how you doing,
boss?
Hey, Chris.
Well, Travis Hunter finished fifth in a receiving with minimum snaps at receiver compared to the other four above him. The four above him are Jeremiah Smith, you were right, and McMillan's three, and the tight end's at one. So what, do you want to draft the tight end? Because, no, he can play corner and then give him a couple of snaps at receiver. I think that's fine.
All right, now you're saying, okay, Chris, it's interesting. You're saying that, and I think value-wise, if he truly is as good at corner with those ball skills, I mentioned Denzel Ward has all these great coverage skills. How many balls have, you know, deflected off his hands? That's not going to happen with Travis Hunter. But why then is Andrew Berry talking about him at wide receiver?
Honestly, I don't even like Andrew Berry. We should have fired him. I like the Stefanski. Right. We should have kept Stefanski. We should have. He can't draft. He can trade, but he can't draft. So honestly, I don't care what Andrew Berry says or thinks about him. But I like him at both positions. No matter to me. But I would prefer to play him at corner and give him a couple of snaps at receiver. But I'm gonna let you go, boss. Appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
Andrew Berry is the one that's gonna make the call. I mean, at least we think. And it's kind of. No one's on this show saying Travis Hunter sucks. I mean, the guy is damn good. But at two, you've got to get it right. And as I said before, I think Abdul Carter, in a more premium position, can be a game wrecker at edge. And, yes, if somehow you persuaded Miles to come back and he was playing, you have Garrett on one side and Carter on the other, that's a start. It is.
All right, so some news so far today at the Combine in Indy, and I love the trickling of news. Don't forget, Kevin Stefanski is going to be able to talk 4 hours from now. 1 o'clock, we'll carry that live. Better tune in a few minutes early just in case, and you'll carry that live plus instant reaction from Baskin and Phelps right afterwards. So the first thing was that the Titans had granted former Pro Bowl linebacker Harold Landry III permission to seek a trade. That, according to Adam Schefter. So it's leading a lot of people to think that, that means that number one overall to replace Landry would be Penn State outside linebacker Abdul Carter. And he's listed right now as an outside linebacker. His weight, Mitch, you said, because I saw it posted, he was like, he's 250. He's fine size-wise. Where did he say that he was?
He said today he was at 248, which is considerably lighter from some of his previous listings at around 250. 260.
Okay, so there's a lot of questions about where he fits in, what kind of a pass rusher, where would he be lined up, you know, what kind of stance would he be in, because he was kind of this amoeba, kind of a hybrid situation.
He did a lot more edge rushing last year.
He did, yes. Yeah. And in his standout year, now he was injured, I think, in his final game of the year. You go back, he did have some big plays, obviously, in the Penn State playoff run. I guess I should first ask you, where are you, Matt Derry, on Abdul Carter? Do you consider him generational? Because I do not.
No, I don't know if he's generational. I mean, all these draft nicks that say this draft is not as good as previous years, and that all these NFL GMs that they've polled have said, to be quite honest, we've got 12 or 13 first-round grades, and that's it, based on, of course, there are 32 first-round picks. So that's not good. To sit here and say he's generational? I mean, Trayvon Walker went number one a few years ago. Is he a generational player?
No.
Aiden Hutchinson probably is. He went two years ago, 3 years ago. So,
man, even generational, though, you're putting Hutchinson as generational already? I mean, he had a great year before the injury.
He's pretty damn good.
He's good. He's good. When I think generational, I'm thinking we're talking Hall of Fame already.
Like Lawrence Taylor?
Yeah.
So no.
Gets thrown around a lot.
I don't. But so in that sense, if you don't think Carter is, to use your term, generational or even special, or Hunter, same thing, then you're taking a quarterback there.
So Abdul Carter, people have been fantasizing about what it would be like to have Abdul Carter and Myles Garrett. And Abdul Carter actually weighed in on this as he got a chance to talk today at the Combine.
Yeah, that'd be dope. Myles is one of the guys I study, one of the guys I watch. Just his game, the way he can impact the game as a pass rusher, as a defender overall, as a special team, jumping over the pile, blocking the kick. He's one of the guys I study, try to emulate my game after.
Man, I imagine that Jim Schwartz would be doing everything he can to envision a world where he has both Abdul Carter and Myles Garrett rushing the passer. That would be awesome.
There's a lot of people saying he should go number one and that he's the best player in this draft.
Mm-hmm.
And look, there's not a lot of people right now publicly saying it would be dope to come to Cleveland.
Well, that's true. That's a good point.
I mean, Abdul Carter saying it, whether he believes it or not, that is pretty dope. I mean, like, you got to have – that's the other thing that Andrew Berry's going up against right now. He's got to persuade free agents first before we even get to the draft to consider even coming here. So he's got a lot of work to do. But I think this kid is really good, and I think in this draft he is – maybe arguably the best player in it.
Well,
he's good. He's
so
really good.
If that is the case, if Abdul Carter is the best and Tennessee ends up not trading, they sit there at one, they take Abdul Carter, who, again, I don't think is in the same stratosphere as a prospect coming out as Myles Garrett. But in this draft, as you said, not as many blue chippers, not as many first-round grades.
Yep.
Number one overall, okay, maybe that's the case. Maybe Abdul goes number one. What does that do, and how does that change the Browns' approach at number two? 216-474-0092. Don't forget, we got Matt Underwood coming up about 13 minutes from now. What does that change for the Browns, Matt, if Cam Ward is sitting there at number two overall?
Well, number one, you gotta see if you love him. And also, you got to see
Matt,
what...
they're running up and handing over the card. Are they not?
For Ward?
For Cam Ward.
I mean, I would. But you also got to realize, what if the Raiders think Cam Ward is the second coming? And then they'll go, we're going to give you three number ones to move up four spots. Or whatever it is. You've got to have those conversations and be ready. Because if some team thinks, oh my gosh, if the Browns think Ward and Sanders are very close to each other,
yeah,
and you can trade down and still get one of those two.
Boy, you just did give me a crazy scenario where the Browns get a couple of number ones. And they trade down to number six. Of course, one of those ones would be the number six this year. But they squeeze an asset out of, say, the Raiders, and then they still get Shedeur Sanders, the guy I thought we were going to get all along at number two.
That would be creative.
That would be a coup, creative. Right? Even if you didn't love him, if you got another pick out of it, that to me, now we're talking real value.
For sure. And I'm not saying this is the Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf thing all over again. But there are teams that think Sanders is higher up. There are teams that have Jackson Dart number one on their board. There are.
Wait, Brian Hoyer has a team?
Did he? Oh, he said that yesterday?
Oh, boy, a week ago.
Well, he said he likes Jackson Dart the most out of the quarterbacks. He doesn't think the other two should be top two quarterbacks.
Okay. Yeah, there are teams that, from what I've read, that have Dart higher than these other two. You know, they didn't like how Cam Ward handled the end of the year. They're not loving that Sanders won't throw at the Shrine Game, won't throw at the Combine. There's warts everywhere. This is not, you know.
Why do people get so upset about them not throwing at the Combine? They've thrown for how many years in college? They have how many games on film?
Because all the teams are there.
Yeah, especially Cam Ward and Shedeur. I mean, there's plenty of film.
They've earned that right to be considered top picks that they don't have to throw in the draft. That's how it works. I mean, Will Howard has to go throw, right? He has his college football career essentially was the last 4 weeks.
Right, because yeah, nobody cared about Will Howard after the Michigan game.
No, but Owen, you could make the argument that none of these guys have to do anything there. They could all just show up and interview, and it could be and the underwear Olympics could go away.
Yeah, but say, if you're a middle of the pack prospect, you're not going to go, okay, that group thinks not going to get me, and go, you know what? We all said we're not going to throw. Because if you give me the opportunity to outshine you, I'm going to take it every time.
Well, and it's also turned into a giant TV show. Yeah. ABC, I mean, they're putting the Saturday combine and the quarterback stuff on ABC. The league's going to want some legitimate quarterbacks out there. They're not going to want the sixth and seventh round pick guys.
North Dakota State's quarterbacks, not right. You know. Yeah.
So, all right, but again, it depends on what Andrew Berry has on his board when it comes to the quarterbacks. Who's the kid that we've never heard of that all of a sudden now?
But Louisville?
Yeah, yeah. All of a sudden people are going, oh, maybe he's a – people are, you know, are looking at – Will Howard, to me, I God bless him. He won the national title. Go Bucks. Is Will Howard as good as Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders? Yeah. I don't think so.
All right, Marcus Sinarora. Go ahead, Marcus.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Hey, Marcus.
I think the Browns will trade out of the pick unless they take the quarterback. Because, Abdul Carter's fine, but Myles Garrett, I don't think he's that worried about the defense. I think he's more worried about the offense. And you can't take Travis Hunter that high because he can't play 100 snaps a game in the NFL, like you said, Matt. I mean, Charles Woodson comes to mind, and he never played much wide receiver. He caught a few passes. It's just there's too much abuse to the body. So I see the Browns trading back. Someone's going to trade up. I'll tell you, I'm not trading 3 ones to move up to get either one of those quarterbacks. I don't know what kind of deal they'll get. And you know what? Another funny thing, you know, Greg Cosell, who says Cam Ward's the number one quarterback in the draft. And he said the kid from Louisville is his second favorite quarterback in the draft.
Oh, boy.
And yeah, listen, Greg Cosell knows what he's talking about.
Film
guru. And then there's somebody like Brock Purdy. There's somebody down here in this draft that's going to get picked and may have an impact. But I just see the Browns trading out. I don't see any way. Unless they take that quarterback at 2, they're not going to stay there. Appreciate you guys.
All right. Thank you, yeah. Marcus. Is it
Look at Bo Nix. I mean, Bo Nix turned out to have a pretty darn good year and helped Denver turn it around last year. And he slid. He wasn't a – what was he, 16, 17? Mm-hmm. Is that where he got drafted?
I mean, who are your candidates for Brock Purdy? Can we power rank them right now? Do we have enough time? Because I've got them ready to go. Yes, number one, Curtis Rourke, former Ohio University Bobcat and Indiana Hoosier. Number two, Kyle McCord, former Buckeye and former Syracuse Orange. Boy, three different schools I've went to that I've mentioned right now. And number three, Will Howard, former Buckeye, also former school of mine.
Can I just also say
somewhere that you can throw
him? It's the Lima Bowl.
That's right.
Can I just say this? If the Cleveland Browns somehow trade down or whatever and they take Jalen Milroe.
Oh, boy.
I'm done. Like
everybody kid, does have a limit, right? That's your limit.
That kid.
Well, you and Kent Carman
stinks.
Both.
That kid. That I had people, friends of mine that were at the Senior Bowl that just said, "Holy hell, I've never seen a worse performance at the Senior Bowl than this kid." Like, couldn't complete a throw, any throws, and just, you know, good winner in college certainly, but
was he?
I don't.
Some I watched folks, him get his ass beat by Oklahoma. So.
And that Michigan game was pretty ugly, too, in the bowl game. I mean, I just don't see it. I don't see it.
All right.
There's a fly ball to deep center field. Payne won't get it. Goodbye! Travis Bazzana with a two-out, three-run homer here in the bottom of the ninth to pull the Guardians to within 9-6.
Voice of the Guardians, Matt Underwood, courtesy of the Guardians. We are getting excited about real baseball, real good weather. Be nice to have that again, although we got up to like 50 degrees
Dude, we took the dogs on walks yesterday. Oh, it was
amazing.
Yeah. It was amazing.
We're able to get a hold of Matt Underwood right now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. And we had a big conversation about second base. And Matt, great to hear your voice again. You sounded great talking about real home runs in spring training. We played the Bazana call. So, Matt, second base for you right now. How do you think they are going to approach this as we get closer and closer to the end of spring training?
Well, I mean, I think they're still going to try to get a look at his admit.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Any different, you know, options as possible. But I think if you start looking at the names in the mix, I think Gabriel Arias, for me, is a guy that they kind of know defensively what he can do. A shortstop by trade, so you know he's got the physical skills to be able to handle the position. I think the bat is something that is very intriguing. We watched him the other day over in Scottsdale against the Diamondbacks. I mean, the bat still plays. He hit a home run. The question is, can he do it consistently at the big league level? And so far in the sample size we've seen, there's inconsistency there. There's a lot of chase. If he can discipline himself to swing at better pitches and not chase the slider off the plate and pitches that are outside that he can't get to, I think there's a chance that, he's a guy that can be an impact player. And I think behind him, you've got guys like Juan Brito, who's a very, young player, who's got a lot of exciting upside, but we haven't seen him yet, especially at the big league level on a day-by-day basis. So, Tyler Freeman, Daniel Schneeman, those guys have proven that they can play multiple positions. So there's flexibility with those guys. Travis Bazana, as we saw yesterday, he's the future without question because, you don't spend a number one pick on a guy to let him develop for year after year after year. He's a college player, so he's not that far away, but he still needs a little season, I think, before he's ready to step into the big league level. So today, as we sit here, calendar hasn't yet turned to March. Still a lot of questions to be answered, and they're going to continue to evaluate as we go through the rest of the spring training.
Is Arias's work ethic better? I know last year on the broadcast you guys kind of pointed out, without getting too negative about it, that there were some questions about that. Do you feel like that was a light that turned on for him?
I think when you saw him go to AAA and then go to play winter ball after that, I think you saw, again, you saw the skill set that's there. He hit over 300 at AAA. There's some power there with doubles. So, again, he didn't go down when he was sent down. He didn't go down and pout and kick the dirt and go the other way. So that's all positive. That's a good sign. And, again, look, there are a lot of guys. The history of the game is littered with players who could excel through the minor leagues, get to AAA, but couldn't translate it to the big league level. And that's the hurdle left for him. He's done everything I think he can do at the minor league level to prove that he's worthy of an opportunity. Now, can he take that opportunity and run with it?
Matt, vote in year two. You got to love, the incredible rookie season, the debut as a manager, certainly was not in over his head and was able to very Frank Cota-like push all the right buttons throughout the season and really put a scare into the Yankees. And they were very close, I thought, to playing their way to a World Series opportunity. Year two, are we going to see a more confident vote, someone who understands his team even that much better?
I think so. I think he's more, I don't want to say comfortable, that's never the right word, but not everything's new this year for him. I think that, you know, last year, as I said to him the other day, I think there was one player in that clubhouse that he had known that he had actually played with and had a relationship with when he walked in. So he had to get to know all of the players, not only on the active roster, but, you know, the depth players as well. This year, you know, there's a familiarity. There's a relationship that's already been built. So he's building upon that. And I think to take it a step further, you know, his message to the team was what they accomplished last year is great, and no one wants to minimize that. But obviously it's a new season. He wants them to make last year's ceiling this year's floor. So let's build off of that. And that's been the message that, you know, don't be satisfied with what you accomplished a year ago and where we finished. Let's advance that. I mean, I like the fact that he's very upfront when he says, our goal is to win the World Series. Why else would we be doing this if that's not the ultimate goal? So they were close last year, and I think that's still the carrot they're going to chase.
Matt, they've played 4 exhibition games, and I know that it does, I mean, these games don't count, but you're trying to take a look at everybody. When will we see Chase DeLauder? Today, maybe?
I think it's close. I mean, I'm heading in here in a few minutes to check and see what the latest is. But I know, you know, in talking with them yesterday, it's not that they're necessarily, you know, slow playing him, but they want to make sure that when they put him out there, that there's no, you know, risk of a setback. And so I think they're being cautious, but from what I've seen, he looks great. He looks like he's, you know, kind of chomping at the bit, ready to go. Saw him take live batting practice. Yeah. Smoke on the straightaway center field halfway up the batter's eye. So that's the kind of thing that DeLauder brings that you can't teach. It's just the natural power. This guy doesn't, you know, he doesn't have that violent swing for the fences kind of approach. He just has a really short, compact swing, but with his size and his just physical ability, the ball jumps. And we know he can play the outfield. We've seen it. You know, the skill set is there. He's a big, physical guy. You know, he's fun to watch. He stands out. When you go to the practice fields and you're watching the guys, you know, take batting practice and work out, you know, he looks like he's a head taller than everybody on the field. I mean, he's just got that presence about him. So, yeah, I think everybody's excited to see him out on the field, to see where he's at and how far away, you know, he is. My guess is he's not that far away, but it's a matter of, you know, stacking bricks day by day, staying healthy, being able to do it and be a guy that you can count on reliably to be out there in the lineup every day.
All right, Matt, the final question. You have unique insight in because of what you've done over the years and your relationship with the Guardians and all the great work that you do to the Dolan family. And I guess I'd ask, how has it been working for the Dolans and the legacy of Larry Dolan passing away this week? There's been so many great tributes, and I just wondered if you had any great stories or, I imagine, great perspective in being so close to that family.
You know, I think the enduring legacy of Larry Dolan is that he was a Cleveland-born and bred kid. I mean, he loved the city. I think that's evident by all of his philanthropic work, but he loved this team. The opportunity to be able to purchase the ball club was a dream come true for him. Huge, passionate fan. He wanted nothing more than to see this team, you know, reach that ultimate goal of winning the World Series. And, you know, I think that he should be celebrated for the fact that, you know, he grew up here. He played high school football here. He, you know, practiced law in the Cleveland area. And just he's just Cleveland through and through. And I think the thing that I will always remember about the Dolan family in general is that they're just regular people. I've told the story before that, you know, several years ago, I was doing laundry at the Residence Inn, and I'm in there folding my clothes, and who's standing next to me folding her laundry but Eva Dolan, Larry's wife? I mean, how many owners of Major League sports teams are staying, A, at the Residence Inn, and B, doing their own laundry? But they're just, you know, they've always just been regular people that have tried to be as, you know, as good a steward of this franchise as they could be. And look, the track record speaks for itself. Yes, they haven't reached the ultimate goal, but year in and year out, consistently, they've empowered people like Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff to do the job and to keep this team relevant. You know, this team hasn't had that huge downturn where they're losing 100 games year in and year out. They have kept this team competitive and, you know, on the precipice of greatness year in and year out. And hopefully this is the year they get over that hump, because the pieces are in place. They're not a perfect team, but there are very few outside of Los Angeles that seem to be the perfect team. So we'll see how this season plays out.
All right, Matt, look forward to hearing more of your calls during spring training. And then when the real thing starts, we look forward to catching up with you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate the time.
All right.
Thanks, Matt.
There he is, Matt Underwood, Guardians play-by-play on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I'd like to thank Matt Underwood from Guardians TV joining us moments ago. Had a lot of interesting stories to tell about Larry Dolan and, you know, working with the Dolans over the years. And Matt Derry, part of the Derry Brothers podcast on the Odyssey app, joins us right now. Final segment of the show before Baskin and Phelps. And I know you had time to think about it. Because you're somebody who I think is as fair as it gets. Like, you've been very emotional on the Guardians. You've been very critical at times of the Guardians, but it's also,
I love them.
Your passion. It's what you love. It's what you and your family care most about.
My number one team, man. I mean, I might be going to Kansas City for the opener, and I might be going alone. I know you're probably like, "What's wrong with him?"
No, I listen. I've never this is been my to first
a season.
Love.
I've never been to a season opener on the road, and you know, I'm 51. You never know. You never know in life. So I want to go. I'm trying to get my son to go with me, but that's another story. But I do love the team, and you know, I want to win. I want to ring. Like, there's been great runs, and 16 was fun, and nothing better than the 07 team. I loved the 07 team, but I want the whole thing. You know, and we'll see. I mean, they have a good team. This year, I don't know if there's enough hitting, but we'll see.
So I said a couple of days ago after the passing of Larry Dolan that how I would remember the Guardians under the Dolan's ownership was going to be that they were overachievers. And I got jumped on because they don't have a World Series title and they don't spend any money. So everyone lashed out because most of the people that call sports talk radio shows, they want to talk about how cheap the Dolans are, and they use that term with all capital letters. And I say, all right, yeah, so 26 other teams. That doesn't make them unique, but they have done something that is unique, and that is always being able to do more with less. I do have an affinity for that. I think that that kind of hard scrabble mentality is something that I thought would fit this region of the country. And so to have so many people get frustrated, it almost seems to me they're victims of their own success, that the fans would rather have them be, you know, I brought up to you on the phone yesterday, Kansas City Royals.
Yeah.
Okay, Kansas City Royals have that World Series, right? They have that World Series.
Yeah, yeah.
But they also have a lot of...
So do the White Sox.
Yeah, so do the White Sox.
As painful as that was in 2005.
But I mean, who would you have more fun rooting for the last 20 years? The Guardians.
Right, the Guardians' record.
It's not even close.
But see, there's things that go into it. Like, Dick Jacobs saved the team from moving, helped with the Gateway Project, built so much. Then the team got good. Then Uncle Artie moved the Browns. And so Dick Jacobs kept the team. The Cavs were irrelevant at the time with Sean Kemp and the blue and white swoosh jerseys and you know, an empty Gund Arena with all blue seats that you went, man, the Indians and Jacobs Field was the place to be. And Dick Jacobs was lauded for that. What's interesting about Larry Dolan is, like, you know, he wasn't as public. Not that Dick Jacobs was this big of a public figure, but Larry Dolan kind of stayed out of the way. And you're right. The payroll came down, and then the whole Dolan's cheap thing became really more bigger as Paul has taken over and Larry has gotten older and unfortunately just passed away. But you're right. I wouldn't say they're bad owners by any stretch. And Terry Francona spent 11 years here. That's one of the most respected guys in the game. Do you think after 5 or 6 years, you'd be like, I can't work for these people. Get me out of here. No, stayed a long time. And there has been some success, but the issue has been, you're right. I think their PR has never been good, at least lately. I don't think they put themselves out there enough to the fans. And, you know, and when they did spend, Bourne and Swisher was a disaster. And I think they're still scared of that a little bit. I wish they would have built on last year a little bit more in the pocketbook. They didn't. But they're also got two very smart guys, like you said, at the top. So I like what they've done, but do I love that ownership? No. But do I like them? Yes, if that makes sense.
It does make sense to me. I think it's a bigger discussion about I got a good one for social media because I just looked up Kansas City. They have three playoff appearances in the last. Got to go back to 1986.
Yeah, two World Series, though.
Well, 85, yeah, and obviously the World Series in 2015.
Yeah.
So who would you rather be a fan of in that time span? You'd get the World Series if you're the Royals, but you get 90% of the seasons are horrendous and you're done with baseball by June.
Horrendous. So, and the White Sox are great. And the White Sox are the same thing.
It's easy for me. I'm a fan of one team in that town and a fan of another team.
Go away.
Yeah.
Go away, Owen. No, so you know what? I've stumbled onto a new topic.
Front running.
Matt, you were terrific today. Thank you for joining us. Cavs,
Tone, great Cavs, to be with you, brother.
Cavs-Lakers collision course. Can you say it?
Yeah, I can't wait. I'll be there with you.